You're listening to the newest episode of Adrift, written and read by Doyce Testerman. Every few days, we'll bring you another installment of the story as it's written, as part of an insane overcomplication of what should be a simple NaNoWriMo project. You may be downloading these podcasts via iTunes or Podiobooks, and if so, I'd like to invite you to come by my website, doycetesterman.com, to comment and join in the conversation, or you could contact me directly at doyce@doycetesterman.com. With all that said, let's get on with the story. Once upon a time, the queen of the kingdom was very sick. The king had many doctors come and try to help her, but they all said the same thing, that the queen needed medicine with ingredients that were too rare and too hard to get. They could keep her from getting worse, but they had no way for her to get better. There was a small chance she would get better on her own, but that's all it was, a chance.
What's a chance, Daddy?
It's like being lucky, sweetie, having good things happen. Usually. The princess wanted to do something to help the queen, so after the king told her what they had told him about the very rare medicine, she went to the doctors and asked them what these special ingredients were. "There is a mushroom that only grows at the bottom of small, abandoned burrows in the forest of anything," one doctor said. "But it is almost impossible to find because there is no way to know if a burrow has the mushroom at the bottom before you start digging, and most of them don't." The princess nodded and said, "What else?"
"There is a nut that grows at the very top of the trees in the forest of anything," another doctor said.
He had baggy cheeks that hung down and reminded the princess of an old dog that slept outside the castle kitchens, and they swung back and forth as he shook his head.
"But at the tops of the trees, the branches are too light and thin to climb, so they cannot be picked," he sighed. "And they only very, very rarely fall to the ground because they are delicious when ripe, and the small animals that live high in the branches of the forest eat them."
The princess nodded and said, "What else?" The last doctor to speak was the most respected of them all. She was very kind, but very serious, and all of the other doctors stopped talking whenever she decided that there was something that she wanted to say. They were quiet now because she had stepped forward and bent down to talk to the princess. "The last ingredient is a very beautiful flower that only grows at the very top of a waterfall of frozen water that still moves."
"That's so silly, Daddy. Frozen water doesn't move."
The princess thought the same thing, but the doctor reminded her that you could find anything in the forest of anything if you looked hard enough. The princess nodded. The doctor explained that it was impossible for anyone to get to the top of the waterfall because the rocks were slick and slippery with ice, and even if you were quick and nimble enough, like a cat, you had to be strong enough to keep from being knocked down by the water. The princess thought about all this. Then she thanked the doctors and turned to get ready for her trip. "What can you do?" asked one of the doctors. Not the kind, serious doctor. She was watching. "There is no way to get all of the ingredients." The princess turned back to the doctors. "You can find anything in the forest of anything," she said. "So I will find a way."
"Can we go back to the plan where we get shot at?" John asked.
He stood as far back as possible from the hatch I was looking through. It had taken us only a few minutes to drop to the hull of the cruiser, half an hour to navigate the chill, unlit corridors to reach the opposite side of the ship, and twice as long for Bilibil to convince us that the idea she had wasn't an elaborate kind of suicide. At the end of that hour, she'd finally given up on convincing John, and had left the two of us in search of a means to power up the airlock. I continued looking through the battlecruiser's airlock viewport, gauging distance and angle. "I thought you said that was a bad plan."
"It is a bad plan," John replied. "But this is a phenomenally bad plan."
"That's all relative," I said.
"Remind me never to meet your relatives," John muttered.
"Come over here," I said, ignoring his dire tone. Normally, John was laconic. He got stoic when he was angry, but a case of nerves had the opposite effect. He got positively chatty. I wasn't sure he was even listening to what he was saying. He crossed his arms.
"I don't want a particularly good look at my final resting place, thanks."
I looked over my shoulder at him, not bothering to conceal an annoyed scowl.
"Would you quit your whinging and come over here?" "It's not whinging, it's self-preservation," John grumbled, but stepped up to the viewport as he spoke. "What am I looking at?"
I tapped the port and pointed up at a slight angle, indicating a dark, rectangular opening in the hull of another ship. "That's the opening we're going to be aiming for." John blew air out through his teeth, fogging the glass for a moment.
50 meters at least, he said. We'll have more than enough push to get there before we pass out, I said. It'll take 6, maybe 7 seconds to reach it.
Gonna seem a lot longer.
True, I said, but the distance isn't the primary concern. I tipped my finger again, indicating a dark and empty space just beyond the other ship. It's the problems that present themselves if we miss.
You're right,
John murmured, his face near the glass as he peered upward. His eyes slid away from the view and back to me.
You should have brought Yorn along for this.
He turned and stalked back across the small chamber, leaning against the open inner hatch.
It's not that bad, I said, trying to sound positive. Most of the stories about hard vacuum are myths. I know, John cut in. I had to do a hard vac exercise back with the CN.
He shook his head, his eyes anywhere but on me.
20 years ago, and I still wake up in a cold sweat sometimes.
I frowned at him.
I never had to do anything like that.
The corner of John's mouth quirked up.
Well, I recognized the expression and closed my eyes. Don't say it. That'd be one more way Special Forces demonstrates their elite training, John continued, and Fleet demonstrates their ability to carry Special Forces around.
He made a face.
No wonder you're not worried about this. You don't know any better.
My annoyance flared up. If you remember, the power to the control panels in the chamber came up, interrupting my reply. A few seconds later, the wall-mounted comms cracked, and Bilibill's voice crackled through.
Jit makes powers of usefulness within me, she announced. I am returning.
Wonderful, John growled.
The princess left the castle right away, and reached the forest quickly, because the forest grew right at the edge of the kingdom. She took a good look around, and decided what to do next. I don't hear a waterfall, she said, and the trees are very tall, and it will take a long time to get to the top. She looked around. But I'm already on the ground, so I will start by looking for the mushroom. She wandered through the forest, looking at the ground, and it didn't take very long to find an abandoned animal burrow. She was excited by this, but when she tried to look inside the burrow to see if the rare mushroom was at the bottom, she realized the hole was too small and too dark to see into. She found another burrow, and then another one, and then another, but the problem was always the same. There was no way to see if the rare mushroom was inside. After checking many holes, the princess sat on a large rock and rested her chin on her hands to think. She was feeling sad.
"Excuse me," said a voice. "May I ask what you're doing?"
The princess turned and saw a rabbit looking at her with one ear drooping down in confusion.
"I'm trying to find a mushroom at the bottom of one of these burrows," the princess said. "But I can't see down into them because they are too small and too dark, and I don't even know if the mushroom is even in there."
"A mushroom at the bottom of an old burrow?" asked the rabbit. "Oh, I can tell you that," it said. "I see them down there sometimes when I go exploring."
It made a face.
"I don't like them very much."
"Why is that?" asked the princess.
"They taste like medicine."
The rabbit stuck out its tongue.
"That's probably the one I need," said the princess.
So the rabbit...
"What's the rabbit's name, Daddy?"
Mira.
"Like Aunt Mira?"
"Just like Aunt Mira.
Is that okay?"
"It's very silly, Daddy."
So the rabbit, named Mira, went down each of the burrows looking for the mushroom that the princess needed. And it wasn't long before she found one and dug it up with her quick little paws and brought it back up. The princess was very happy.
"Is that all you needed?" asked the rabbit.
"No," said the princess. "I need to get a nut from the top of the tall trees."
"Oh," said the rabbit, looking sad. "I can't help you with that. I'm a good explorer, but not a very good climber."
"That's all right," said the princess. "I can carry you in my pocket if you want to come with me." This made the rabbit happy, so the princess put her in her pocket, picked out a tall tree, and started to climb.
"Daddy, is the princess a good climber?"
"Well, I don't know, Bug. What do you think?"
"She's a very good climber, Daddy."
The princess climbed and climbed, getting higher and higher. As she climbed the tall tree, she passed the tops of shorter trees where birds and small animals stopped and stared. It wasn't often they saw visitors in the tops of the trees, and as far as they knew, they'd never seen a princess climbing by.
"It just goes to show you," they said to each other. "You can find anything in the forest of anything."
The princess climbed until she was so far up that she could feel the trees moving in the wind, and the trunk of the tree had gotten so small that she could almost put her arms all the way around it. Every time she stepped on a new branch, it would bend more than the last one and wave in the air. The princess looked up and saw that she was still a long way from the very top of the tree.
"Maybe we should stop climbing now.
said the rabbit from inside the princess's pocket. She was a great explorer, but during the climb she had learned that she didn't like being up in the air very much. But the princess was very stubborn sometimes, and was about to start climbing again when a voice said,
"Excuse me, may I ask what you're doing?"
The princess looked over her shoulder and saw a small squirrel looking at her with its tail flickering back and forth in confusion. "I'm trying to pick a nut from the top of this tree," the princess said. "But even though I'm a very good climber, I think I'm too big to get all the way to the top. The branches are getting too small to hold me."
"A nut from the top of this tree?" asked the squirrel.
"Oh, I can get you that," he said. "I see them up there all the time when I play at the top of the tree."
It made a face.
"I don't like them very much."
"Why is that?" asked the princess. "I heard they were delicious."
"They are when they're ripe," he said. "But they aren't ripe yet."
The squirrel stuck out his tongue.
"They taste like medicine."
"That's probably the one I need," said the princess. So the squirrel...
"What's the squirrel's name, Daddy?"
"The squirrel's name is Mac."
"Like Uncle Mac?"
"Just like Uncle Mac."
"You're so silly, Daddy."
So Mac jumped higher and higher in the trees, looking for the nut that the princess needed, and it wasn't long before he found one on one of the highest branches, and picked it up from the branch and brought it back down. The princess was very happy.
"Is that all you needed?"
asked the squirrel. "Not quite," said the princess. "I need to find a flower at the top of a frozen waterfall, but I don't know where that is." The squirrel laughed.
"Look that way," he said,
and pointed with his tail. The princess looked the way the squirrel had pointed and saw a shining waterfall in the distance.
"I've always wanted to see that waterfall up close," said the squirrel. "Can I come with you?"
"Of course," said the princess. "I just need to climb down first."
"Thank goodness," said the rabbit.
Once the princess had climbed back down, and the rabbit had jumped out of her pocket and hugged the ground, she and her new friends set off toward the waterfall.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Adrift, written and read by Dois Testerman. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.com. Adrift was first conceived as a serialized flash fiction story told 140 characters at a time via Twitter, and in fact continues today and every day as an ongoing story. You can check it out on Twitter at www.twitter.com/finris or on my website at doistesterman.com/adrift. Our intro music is Invisible Walls by Revolution Void off their album Increase the Dosage, available from jamendo.com. Our outro music is Struttin' by Triad, also available from jamendo.com. There are many people to thank for their help and input on this project, but the two that jump right out at me, sometimes literally, are my wife Kate and Tim White, perhaps best known in this arena for his Return to Northmoor podcast. One of these individuals has been an unfailing, unflagging, ever-optimistic beacon of support and positive thinking. The other has given me tremendous technical help, suggestions, and advice as I learn how much I don't know about podcasting. Which one is which? I'll leave as an exercise for the listener.
Speaking to this tiny box, through Wiresworth's walk, strutting down browser blocks, worldwide transmission talk, fuzzy flicker FM balls, DRM dash to the walls, podcast broadcast signal no noise, global infinite internet choice, music chunks get it all for free, major labels don't get me, contracts kiss my industry, I'll sing the system to its knees.